welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour on this Tuesday, January 26th edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. We are joined this hour with Stan Deo after his anniversary week last week. And
I hope you all wished Stan a happy anniversary, him and his wife. God bless them. Before we get to Stan, I just want to mention that, again, portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They're our go-to company for all things survival-related. I just pulled a trick on Eric there, I think. But AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, they're our go-to company for all things survival-related. And let me tell you something. They've got the best products, the best-tasting food. Lady, our studio dog, I brought her with us tonight to the studio. And she's been running around here. And one thing we have are the freeze-dried long-term storable bananas. She loves them. Oh, she will, like, she'll she just loves the freeze-dried bananas, but so do we, and all of the fruits, including the strawberries, raspberries. I mean, it's just fantastic, folks. You've got to try those even in a non-emergency. Put them in your oatmeal, or just snack on them. They're fantastic. But they've got the best freeze-dried long-term storable food on the planet. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. And I'd be remiss not to mention healthmasters.com. Done so much for so many. Healthmasters.com. Healthmasters.com. You want to take, you know, if you're out to purchase nutritional supplements, that is our go-to company for all things nutrition related. Healthmasters.com. Best nutritional supplements on the market, on the planet, if you will. And, it's just the best of the best. And I've seen the videos of the manufacturing plants. Oh my goodness, it's like sterile, and the best ingredients. That's healthmasters.com. But Stan Deo.com, every Tuesday. What a great guy. We had a great conversation last week. Stan, you know what? I'm just going to open with this, but you can take us wherever you want to go. You had recommended some research that I do some research, and I did, and It just was some interesting stuff that I went over with respect to who might be the Antichrist and false prophet. But it's been a discussion that we've had on air and off air. But talk about a premier researcher, is Stan Deo. So anyway, Stan, thanks for being such a great guy, and I hope you and your wife had a great anniversary. And of course, it's just things are getting weird out there.
They are getting weird. But we did take time off the day after the anniversary as well to go see a movie. And I was just saying to Joe that we're Star Wars fans, and so we went to see the new Star Wars movie in 3D, and it was just perfect. The special effects and everything were better than the first one, and I did see the first one when it came out years ago.
Mm. My wife saw the first one and this one. I'm not a big movie fan. I don't care for, I don't know, I'm a weird guy. I just don't care for movies. I took a date to the first Star Wars movie. Embarrassing, because she had to wake me up. Okay. I did not see the movie.
That's slept bad. I wouldn't admit that. Day.
Well, I'm confessing it all right now. I actually took a date. Of course, that was during the days I worked 24 on, 24 off, or, 48 on, and then 24 off, and so I was pretty wiped out. But, yeah. Needless to say, there was no second date.
Do you reckon?
Anyway.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, that's definitely against the etiquette and the dating rules there. I'm sorry to hear that. But when that movie first came out, we got to include the rushes of it in our portions of the trailer in our first TV production, 1978, with Channel 9 down in Perth. And the scenes in the Millennium Falcon, you probably won't remember what I'm talking about, but anyway, we got to include that in the documentary on the UFOs are here type thing, and Spielberg appeared on it, and he was making something that was going to come out. What was it? Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It was going to come out later that year as well. So he appeared in our documentary, and after that show was when, you know, I wrote the Cosmic Conspiracy book. So the Star Wars and Close Encounters of the Third Kind kind of always remind me of the beginning of the Cosmic Conspiracy crusade, as it were, through the years.
Hmm. Your first edition of Cosmic Conspiracy, help me out, that came out like in the
1978,
okay, because the final edition came out, what, 3 years ago, 2 years ago,
2010,
okay, so six, oh, I can't believe that, man, okay, wow, alright.
Now the research you were doing, you did watch that video in the Vatican and stuff?
I did. And watched it more than once. I took some notes. I don't have the notes in front of me, but very interesting. The all of the documentation that they've got, it's, I mean, what are they sitting on? What's the Vatican sitting on? I mean, aside from the obvious.
Well, physically, it's on seven hills of Rome. You know, as they a lot of people relate that to the prophecies of the Revelation about the beast having seven heads and seven kings and stuff, and the seven hills of Rome is equated in that prophecy. But watching that documentary, I mean, Holly and I, you know, just nearly fell over with shock at a couple of places. One of the things that really stood out is what you just mentioned about where is the Vatican, where does it sit? And it's only a few hundred acres. What's it, 113 acres, I think, something like that. And it sits on top of a hill, and the hill was there before Rome even formed. That's how old the hill is. It was there when the Etruscans owned the property. And they worshipped, the Etruscans worshipped a goddess called Vaticana. And so they erected a shrine to Vaticana, who was the goddess of the dead. And during the Roman time, they opened that hill up and buried people there, including, they think, St. Peter, but or Paul. Might have been there, too. I'm not sure who all they put there. But the thing is, it's, the Vatican is built on a graveyard on top of it. You can see in the excavations they made in that movie, they're down underneath the Vatican are tombs, and just caves and caves of tombs. And for the Vatican to be on a hill and to be called Vatican after the goddess Vaticana, who is the goddess of the dead, kind of makes you wonder about the real purpose of the Vatican, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, and I looked at the the name of the documentary escapes me. Is on the History 2 channel, or History, what is it, HD, or H2 HD channel.
Secret something, the Vatican secret.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. So,
but I was looking at that, and I'm thinking, okay, if this much was disclosed, you know, what did they not disclose? Or, and obviously a whole lot. And one of the other thing, too, and I didn't realize this, that the papers of the Pope are withheld from public view for 75 years after the death of the Pope. Anyway, I just thought, so many things surrounding the Vatican, the Pope, the Jesuits, the Vatican Bank, the location geographically, as well as, you know, the historical and you know, of the Vatican. My goodness, there's just so much there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, remember the last part of the documentary? They had that kind of the keep-looking thing, which is a building inside the Vatican area, but supposedly not part of the church. It's the business arm, the Vatican Bank, it's been nicknamed. And they control undisclosed amounts of money all over the planet. And although the Vatican operates on a budget of something like $335 billion a year, they usually run short by about $3 billion in income. So you're supposed to feel sorry for them if they run at a deficit. But that's what they disclose for the Vatican, you know, the church part. The bank part, they will not allow to be investigated or, you know, documented for the public. And Lord only knows what countries, I'm not talking about individuals, but what countries they hold paper on in their bank. And that's where the real financial power is. And elsewhere in the documentary, they said, we have priests in, well, almost every country of the world. And they show in there where some of the Russian priests were used by the communists in Russia to spy on the Vatican back during, I think, World War II or somewhere back in there. But it works both ways. The Vatican has, quote-unquote, intelligence agents in all the countries of the world to see what the people are doing, what the governments are doing. So in essence, the Vatican has tremendous global power by their intelligence gathering in all the nations. And they do kind of, quote-unquote, advise a lot of leaders, and more importantly, they control the thoughts of the religious, the faithful Catholics. The Pope says it, it's almost, you know, factum dictum, it's true. And, you know, I just thought about that, and I thought, goodness gracious, you know, the Vatican really is like the power of the first beast. It's rising to be a world power that controls all the nations of the world. And it's dressed in purple and gold and all that kind of stuff. You know, the members of it are. So, I guess what started this discussion with you and I off air was we were talking about the first beast. And it's something to do with the Vatican, I'm sure, with the revived Roman Empire. Because everybody thought Rome died. You know, the Caesar was gotten rid of. You know, like the head was chopped off of Rome, and Roman Empire died. But yet, when the church, you know, one Caesar said, "Look, let's make it go into the church. Let's make the Christian religion the official religion of Rome." And at that point, they started dumping in the concept and the structure of a Roman Empire. Instead of a Caesar, you had a Pope. And that's why there were so many battles in Europe between France and the Vatican and stuff like that. It was because the French were trying to stop the political power coming from the Vatican. It had a bad economic time around the early 1900s, but it's recovered, and its wealth is just immeasurable at this point. So, you know, yeah, I don't know who they're going to make a deal with or whether the actual Pope will be a Solomon, but I am pretty sure that the name Solomon or something like that, will be the name given to the first beast. But it will have this Vatican overtone to it, whether it be a 10-nation consortium, you know, like the toes of iron and clay in the dream vision that Nebuchadnezzar had and Daniel interpreted. But certainly, the iron legs are the least east and west legs of the Roman Empire that suddenly reappears through the modern Vatican across the whole planet. So the mystery deepens, I guess, is what I'm saying. And that documentary, I wish I could remember the name of it. It really, it really should be watched by a lot of people. And it was made 5 years ago or something like that? It doesn't even have the current Pope in it. And at that time, it was impressive, wasn't it, Doug?
Exactly, it was. And I watched it on the computer in my office. I don't have it here, as all my notes are in the office as well. But yeah, I don't remember the name, but I'll tell you something. And people, I'm sure if you just search, folks, for History Channel Vatican documentary, you'll find it. It was impressive in terms of the. Again, you know, what they disclosed, but it just led me to believe if they allowed this much information out, what are they keeping, you know, hidden and secret? And that's, I don't know. Man, I'll tell you.
I just found the date of it. Anyway, 2001 is a National Geographic production, which I think the History Channel played. But 2001, and that was, 15 years ago.
That's 2001? Wow.
That's what it said, copyright 2001 on the tail end of it. I just pulled it up. End of it, I don't know what the name of it is yet, but
wow.
I'm all surprised that they let so much of it out. I mean, it showed the assassination attempts on the popes, and how they elect, you know, a new pope, and there's just a lot of hocus pocus that goes on behind the scenes that they're never going to tell us, you know, out in the open. But it's like a mystery, you know, mystery Babylon type thing. I don't know.
Well, you know, I think what we're looking at here, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Vatican, I think we can say that the Vatican certainly is going to play a big part in ushering in the New World Order, and the Pope is going to play a big part in ushering in this one world religious order, if you will. I mean, Pope Benedict called for a New World Order. Pope John Paul called for a New World Order. You know, I mean, how can we, you know, how can we not? I mean, the Vatican is moving toward a new, even the Vatican is moving toward a new financial world order. And some of the comments made by the Pope were interesting as well of late, talking about the green agenda, the global economy. I don't know, man. That's okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on that, but you know.
Well, I know it's something that needs to be discussed, whether you're Catholic or not. But and along those lines, I did get a couple of emails from people when we talked about it before that said, you know, you're just so wrong that, you know, it's not the Vatican. You know, you don't understand. And I'm thinking, yes, I do. Sorry.
You know, and it's, look, I was raised as a Catholic, and I mean, I went to Catholic elementary school. I attended minor seminary, which was a Jesuit-operated seminary. And Stan, I'll tell the audience this and tell you this and tell everyone this. I had no clue. I didn't know the difference. The Jesuit seminary, I didn't know really what a Jesuit was or what they stood for or what, you know, the power behind it. I knew the Catholic rituals, you know, and of course I was taught Catholic church history. But beyond that, you know, so I must have been like, you know, the odd man out. No one wanted me in their circle because, you know, anyway. But I understand the adherence to Catholicism. I get that, but we can discuss it intellectually, and I think that people have. I think we need to be intellectually honest, and I think that we in so doing, I think we have to recognize. It doesn't matter if it's the Vatican or if it's, you know, it doesn't matter who, but we have to be intellectually honest when we're discussing these things. And if sometimes the truth hurts, so.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, something in that document, secret access to the Vatican or something like that, wasn't it? Something that sound familiar?
Yeah, I'm not that has a ring to it, or...
I think it was called Secret Access to the Vatican or something on the History Channel. But the point is, whether if you are a Catholic, we're not demeaning Catholics, but we are saying that the Vatican, the history of the Vatican has been to not encourage the individual to read and study the Bible on their own. Recently, they've started letting that happen, but when they did, there have been groups of Catholics that have pulled out of the Catholic Church because of what they read in the Bible. Before that time, they kept you ignorant. You know, you just go through the ceremonies and do confession and stuff and your rosary beads, and you'll be fine. But that is not in the Bible. It's just totally not there. And so many people that I've known, including you now, that have been in the Catholic Church have waked up because of actually reading the Bible themselves. You're not too stupid to read the Bible, and you don't have to have a degree in theology to read to understand the Bible. So I encourage everyone, read the Bible and get the truth there. Don't trust any man, anybody. Just read and understand yourself and prove yourself worthy to be, you know, a good servant of the Lord. Anyway,
amen
I'm
to
on
that.
My soapbox.
No, and one more thing, in my studies and research, you know, we see how many different variations or translations of the Bible, from the King James Version to the New King James Version, which I consider perhaps one of the most dangerous versions of the Bible, to the NIV and so on. But when you look at these various Bibles, in the New King James Version, there's over 100,000 word changes, and it's not just thee and thou, but just the numerous. In fact, there's entire passages or entire verses that have been changed and or omitted. In fact, the word Lord, I believe, is removed 66 times, and on. I can go on and on. But I said all that to say this: one of the verses in the Bible is we're not to utter we're not to be repetitious in our prayers. Basically, is what mm-hmm. they're saying. You know,
vain and repetitious prayer. Yeah.
Thank you. And again, I'm operating off of no notes and. And it's been intentionally mistranslated by other Bibles into saying don't talk babble or don't talk foolishness. But in the Catholic Bibles with the imprimatur, that's what they're saying, you know, don't engage in foolish discussion or discourse. However, the actual, primary Bible back, 1611 or prior to 1611.
The Douay version of it, eh?
Well, yeah, exactly. Douay Rheim version of it is, you know, much different than the original one. But anyway, so I just thought that was interesting. Just one example of many. But
well,
go ahead, sir.
Look up the Lord's Prayer, you know, our Father which art in heaven, blah, 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 that we all seem to know. Look that up on the internet and see how many translations there are of that from the Aramaic, which is, you know, it's not an easy language to translate from these days, but the Aramaic language is what Jesus spoke, and there are 15 different translations for the Lord's, or for the, you know, the Lord's Prayer, and there are some significant variations between what you and I normally use and what the other 14 translations give, but just that alone tells you that translating from language to language can be a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember as a kid, the Lord's Prayer changing while I was in church, from "Forgive us our sins" to "Forgive us our trespasses," or the one way or the other.
Yeah.
The removal of the ending. I mean, it's amazing how much the word of the Lord changes in a place where it's not supposed to change a bit.
I know. Well, our brothers and sisters of the Christian faith, whatever church they go to, they perish because of the lack of knowledge. And the only way for them to get it is to read the good book themselves. You know, they can listen to other people, you know, discuss it like you and I are doing. But in the end, we must read the Bible ourselves and, you know, make a concentrated effort to understand the structure of it and the reasons of it according to what we can understand personally. I know that when I go back and read sections of the Bible that I haven't read in 10 or 15 years, because I don't read the Bible through from A to B all the time, you know, or every year or anything, but when I go back and check some of the quotes that I've been using sometimes, I'll think, oops, memory played a trick on me, because that's not what the Bible says. And so it's important that all of us, whether we're new Christians or not, or whether we have not read the Bible, is to get in and read it and try our best to understand it with the help of the Holy Spirit, because that's where the truth lies. And you need to get the oldest versions of it you can to try to reduce the amount of perversion of the word that is going on in the modern world.
Absolutely, and that's why the concordance is good, to take it back to the root definitions of the words. And you know, and you said something, you know, the people perish for lack of knowledge, and this is at a time where the ability for knowledge and the access to knowledge is so easy, and
yes,
it's everywhere. I mean, Bibles are everywhere, and knowledge is everywhere, but I guess it's a matter of what knowledge is actually important that we need to focus on versus everything else.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Stan and Joe. Joe handed me a note earlier, and I just want to confirm something here. The situation in Oregon at the with Ammon Bundy at that preserve is the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. Apparently, there have been either shots fired or reports of shots fired.
Two people shot, three arrested.
Yeah,
Ammon Bundy.
Ammon Bundy's in custody. You know, rather than one thing we don't do, folks, is we don't hang on breaking news. I just want to interrupt this, but we'll acknowledge it. Something happened. Ammon Bundy appears to be in custody, according to the Twitter feed that we're following.
It's actually up in the rest now, too.
Santilli, apparently, who's out there, may or may not be in custody. Whatever. Okay, but we will follow it. We will distill it. Find the important information out and report back to you. So, sorry, Stan, I didn't mean to take away
from that. That's all right. Yeah, it's an important issue. I don't know that I would have handled the situation the way those guys did. It's what they've done, and of course it's a volatile situation. Maybe it will be settled rather quietly and calmly. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think there were disparate. Well, there were opposing agendas. I think there was infiltration, and I think there was deliberate. Some things that were being done deliberately to provoke a confrontation, And that's not an indictment against the Patriots. It's just, to me, a matter of potential. That's what I was seeing.
What's interesting about the timing of this is the Bureau of the Land Management, BLM, they released what they were really after, and that's the minerals and the land out there. And that just came out a day or two ago. What was that? The minerals that are down in that land, and how much mineral? And we're talking gold, a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, there you have it.
Back in the late 50s, early 60s, my dad and his brothers and our whole families, in essence, had a publishing company called Timely Publications out of Dallas. And we were the vanguard at that time of putting out books and distributing books that were waking people up about the conspiracy and the Illuminists and all that kind of stuff. And that's back when it wasn't popular, really wasn't popular. And we had, oh gosh, like 250,000 people write to us, and we didn't have internet in those days, and we had letters, we had a warehouse full of people packing books and everything to get them out across the country. And one morning, Dad came into the office, and a bunch of our files, cards of people's names and addresses were gone, and one of the officers of the company we'd set up, he was a vice president, I guess you'd call him, but the last name was Ringler, R-I-N-G-L-E-R, believe it or not. He was a ringer. He'd come in when the movement first started and was very pro-everything and gung-ho and wormed his way to the top management of the company. And then when it was the right time, he absconded with the names, key names of people across the United States that were dealing with us and were customers and shakers and movers of the conservative movement. And so when you say that this situation with the sit-in might have had some plants, inside the Patriots, I can almost guarantee it. They did it to us, and that's just been their method, is to get somebody inside up close to the top to, bring it down when it's the right time to cause a problem. So you're not wrong. That's just one of their standard tactics.
Stan, I mean, it seems to be the standard operating procedures to divide and conquer, regardless of the situation, regardless of the issue, regardless of the group. I mean, no one no group or no entity seems to be impervious to infiltration. It's incredible. But anyway, I don't know.
Some of the
I've run several security checks on Holly lately. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm just being silly.
She must not be in the room, huh?
No, thank goodness I'd be hit with that.
She's, and folks, if you're not familiar, and I can't imagine anyone not being familiar with Holly Dale, has written a great book, Dare to Prepare. It's really a must for anyone who's interested in preparation. That's Dare to Prepare. If you go to standeo.com, go ahead and order Dare to Prepare, and you can get it in several different formats. So, and of course, Cosmic Conspiracy, as Stan mentioned earlier, that's just a fantastic book as well. So the final edition really, really puts the cherry on the cake or on the ice cream sundae that is, in fact, the world in which we live. So, Stan, thanks so much for writing that. And, Holly, you too. Thank you so much. So I urge everyone to add those to your library.
Yeah, now,
in your lecture series, too, by the way.
Sorry, say again?
Sorry. No, in your lecture series, too, which is just a phenomenal DVD. But I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. Got to do the commercials.
Sure, why not?
On the chat channel for your show tonight, they've been asking about this Planet X business. And it's kind of a rather interesting thing because the professor is out at the California University there that discovered it. It's at Caltech at Pasadena Institute of Technology. Dr. Brown and Constantine Batgen, they've discovered this ninth planet mathematically. They haven't actually seen it yet, but they're telling people where to look with the telescopes to try to actually visually see it. And they've done this on the basis of mathematical calculations about the perturbation of the orbit of Uranus and Neptune and even Pluto, saying that that gives them a direction to look for this massive thing that has the size of Neptune-sized planet out there somewhere. Now, where I disagree with them, I've written to them, I haven't heard back yet, is that they say this Planet X is orbiting out beyond 200 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun. And now, my calculations show, I use standard astronomical equations for planetary orbits, that a planet in an orbit of not 200, but 232 to 235 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun would have an orbital period of 3,600 years. Now, in their article, they say, no, it orbits the Sun every 15,000 years. Well, that just does not conform to the standard, equations for planets orbiting the Sun. It's just way off. I mean, it's like, five times or four times the distance or the orbital time that we calculate for a planet in that orbit. Anyway, I have written to them because I do know that is a very stable orbit, and a planet could orbit at around 232 to 235 AU from the Sun. But it remains to be seen whether it's there or not, and they show an orbital path that I think I agree with. It's got to be elliptical, kind of egg-shaped, and they're showing it in its aphelion, like its furthest point from the Sun where they're looking, and I'm thinking it must be closer to have the effect it's having on the outer planet, at the perihelion, the close Sun point, and even that's still outside the orbit of Pluto and the Kuiper Belt. It's way out there. Anyway, it's encouraging in that they were zeroing in on it, and I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not a professional astronomer, but my crude approximations, as they are, say it should be in closer than and on the other side of the orbit that they're looking at. But time will tell. We'll see.
Hmm. It amazes me just the topic of Planet X and the I don't know. Am I wrong? Shouldn't we know more?
Yes, we should.
I mean,
somebody has the information somewhere on this earth.
It's not that I'm skeptical, but I'm skeptical of a lot of things. But the fact is, how could a planetary body, or maybe that's the incorrect description, how can a body like this be undetectable or
not told, passed down through history? If it is actually something that comes back around.
Stan, I defer to you on this. I really do. You're the most logical and linear thinker with respect to this issue. So I'm going to defer to you on this. I'm confused about this.
Well, yeah, look, there are still some great mysteries about our solar system, the formation of it, and the current state of it, because some of the bodies that might be orbiting out there between us and the nearest star system may not emit enough light in any spectrum for us to detect with our telescopes. There's been a strong support for the the sun almost having a twin, like a binary star system. The majority of star systems in our galaxy did form as twins. Not all, but the great majority of them. Our twin could have been Jupiter, because it was pretty massive, but it did not have enough mass to ignite the fission fusion reactions. As a result, it's just a gaseous giant. You know, it's got moons around it, but if you look at the mass of the planets in our solar system, the inner planets, you know, Mars, Mercury, Earth, Venus, they're smaller planets, and they have a mass distribution, you know, that's much smaller than Jupiter and Saturn and Neptune. Those are the gas giants. Then it's almost like they form a separate group of planets, you know, that are the big guys all hanging together. It's not mixed in with the small guys. Jupiter could have been a dud binary star twin for our sun, or this planet X out there may have been a failed binary star as well. You know, there's just a lot of questions that have to be answered that we don't, at this point, have the answers, at least publicly, to make an appraisal of the situation. There is something out there, I'm pretty sure of that. And, you know, I've been playing with the formula here for our solar system for several years now, then determining the wave action stuff that forms stable orbits. And I do agree that there is a stable orbit out there about 235 to 232 AUs out, which is within, you know, short range of where these guys say it is. They say it's over 200 AU. They didn't say exactly how far. It's this ongoing article or argument or discussion about Planet X. It can affect the inner planets indirectly by affecting the outer planets with gravity perturbations of their orbits, and hence maybe put some physical pressures on the sun through magnetic fields, gravitational fields, that kind of stuff. But that's another whole argument that I guess we don't really need to bore everybody with at this point. But yeah, there could be something out there, guys, and there's still no optical proof that we have a location of it yet.
The question I have, shouldn't we have optical proof?
It's hard to resolve small bodies like that. I know we're, you know, you read reports that they've detected an Earth-like planet in orbit around some distant star system. The way they do that is they measure the amount of light diminished in the sun as these planets pass in front of it, and they can tell then that something of a certain size has passed between us, our telescopes, and that star we're looking at, and they assume it to be an orbital planet, and they can determine the period of it and things like that. But we don't have that luxury with anything in our solar system out to the edges of our solar system, which are at least the distance that light would travel in a year from the sun outward. You know, it takes 8 minutes or so to get to us. Imagine a year's distance of light getting out from us, and at the edge, at the end of that year's travel at the speed of light, you would be to the edge of our solar system. That's a long way out, and for no light coming from it, how can you see it? I mean, we look at optical light and stuff, and, you know, we have enough trouble with Pluto and Uranus and stuff out there, you know, to get good imagery unless we have a satellite or a probe go past it. For a probe to get out there where we want to look where you're talking about, we're talking months at the speed of light, and we don't travel that fast with our little probes. We just got to wait. That's why we're not determining where they are.
Gotcha. Okay, now that makes sense. Hearing it from you like that, okay, I understand that. All right. So we wait and see, I guess, at this point.
Hey, listen, on the show images page, down about right next to the Planet X discussion, you can see that blue planet with the word Planet X. Look to the right of that. It says, compare earthquakes at Yellowstone between 2000 and 2016. And for those of you that can, go to our website to the show images page where the little blue microphone is on the front page. You click on that and get over there and go down the third row down on the right-hand side, and you'll see little yellow dots all over pictures of Yellowstone from the air, from Google Earth. And something is up there. The top part of the picture shows Yellowstone earthquakes from the 1st of January 2000 to the end of 2012. Now, that's 12 years of earthquakes recorded on USGS plotted on that map. And that little dark space there is the lake in the middle of the Yellowstone Park. And you can zoom that image up and you can see a little faint green outline that shows you the state border around that, you know, in the Yellowstone Park. Now, if you go down to the second image from January the 1st, 2013 to 11 January this year, that's only, what, 2 years and 11 days. Look at all the earthquakes that are in the Yellowstone area now. Do you see that? It's absolutely chock-a-block with quakes. There's something going on down there. Can you get to that page on your... I don't know whether you can show it on your...
In fact, it's being shown right now. If folks watching this live on YouTube, just check the image there. You could see it. This is from images, the show images page from standeo.com. Look at the difference in the, well, yellow dots, earthquakes.
Just amazing. And you can see, with I know you're putting your cursor up there, you can see bands of yellow quakes moving to the west. Moving out of the Yellowstone area toward, you know, whatever it is, Utah or something there, or maybe Idaho, I guess it is, something up that high. Maybe over toward Washington. But there's something moving under there, and it's causing these quakes. So I thought that was important to discuss tonight, just a little bit anyway. Keep an eye on Yellowstone.
Well, considering that, and I know, we're not into predictions or whatever, but based on the just this evidence alone, what would happen? I mean, an earthquake, a significant earthquake in Yellowstone, it would be a lot different than an earthquake, we'll say, in California, obviously, right? Because of the what's underneath there.
Yeah. They found the magma pool is four times what they thought it was before. I think our second one down underneath all that. We're seeing some changes in the crust of the earth, and this is definitely, unless you put these pictures together like this, you don't realize what a rapid change in the last 2 years it is compared to the last 12 years before that. You can see that there were earthquakes going to the west out of the Yellowstone area in the top image, which had just a few of them from 2012, but 12 years were the earthquakes, right? But it's the last 2 years that kind of filled out the area. Just amazing. Anyway, that's earthquakes.
And I'm not sure I want to buy. I'm not sure I want to buy real estate next to Yellowstone. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't think it matters.
Hey, did you see on the news today about all the homes that are threatened in California, that area there, falling into the sea because it's washing out the shore?
That. Yep.
Why would you want to stay in your house? I mean, you're
talking about
die
the lady that was complaining.
Over.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
it's also home though. You know, people probably aren't. You know, I imagine I heard that clip where that lady said, "You know, I can't believe they won't let us go home."
How far will that go? I mean, I guess
how long is a piece of string? I mean, you know, this stuff is pounding at the sand. They're built on a bank of sand. How dumb can you be? Don't build your house on sand, and what the Bible says. Duh.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's amazing there too.
Elsewhere in California, they are preparing for the aftermath of El Nino, and you've had a drought, now you've got El Nino with with rain and stuff, and it will continue for a while. We may have another El Nino next year. I don't know yet, but they are getting stores in San Francisco and Los Angeles and San Diego are getting in supplies for people, prep supplies, that people will need when power goes out or water is short or, a number of things that could happen. Earthquakes, obviously that could be affected by the El Nino or by the drought, either one. We think the El Nino is going to weaken this year, and as I say, I don't know what next year will bring, but people are stocking up on supplies, and they need, Holly's book, the Dare to Prepare book you mentioned before. But here it is, mainstream California, NOAA saying, get prepared, get your your supplies in that you will need for emergency power, emergency water, emergency food, light, you know. And there's an article on that you can start looking at it on our show images page. Just click on the top row right picture, which says flooded, getting prepared for El Nino and more in California. So, you know, you have time now, people, especially in California, get prepared, be advised. You know, in addition, right to the left of that are two articles, you know, from Canada and Venezuela. Venezuela is facing 720% hyperinflation, which is meaning that their fresh fruits and vegetables and stuff are out of range of most people's income. They can't afford to buy food. In Canada, across the board, the food prices last year rose about 17%. And this guy here in the picture I've got on that page showing the guy with tomatoes there, he's showing you know, a box of tomatoes there. I don't know how many's in that box, but you know, the year before it was $1.99 a pound for that box. Now he has to sell the same box at $4, you know, at double the price for tomatoes.
Right.
And so it's a good argument for getting what you need and, you know, freeze-dried food and stuff like that, or seeds that you can plant and grow yourself if we have a good growing climate, which is doubtful these days. But famine could very well be on the way on a planetary scale because of, you know, drastic weather changes, climate changes in when spring occurs and what you get. And then, of course, the shortage of food makes it so that whether you got money or not, you can't buy it. It's just not there. That's probably why people will throw their gold and silver into the street, you know, rich people, because you can't eat gold and silver. What they want to do is have food and water and the stuff that they need. That's why we've been telling people for years, you and Holly and I and everybody that's working in this field, get prepared. Buy the stuff you need ahead of time. And now then the price is going up.
You know, that's one of the issues. In fact, we have a new sponsor called Heaven's Harvest. In fact, HagmanSeeds.com, HagmanSeeds.com. That really interested me when I was looking at the fresh fruit and vegetables. I was thinking, yeah, you can have, for example, you know, a freeze-dried corn, and I'm all for having long-term storable food, but I really did not put a lot of thought into the seed part of things. I mean, I did, but I didn't. You know what I mean? So, wow, yeah. Huh.
Well, we've got seeds stored in our fridge outside, or actually it's in the freezer. I hope that they will all be viable. Some won't be, I'm sure, but we've done that now then so that we've got seeds to hopefully plant whenever a spring comes, and this year I'm almost suspecting we have an earlier spring than last year. Not sure, but things are warming up like that here. Joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost 70 degrees where we are this weekend, give you an idea.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And get this, we had snow yesterday, about a half inch of it or so, but it's going to be 70 over the weekend.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think collectively we had 3 feet of snow, roughly, and today it was, I think, 42 degrees. So, you know, it's the freeze thaw melt off. Yeah, it's, and we've seen some pretty drastic temperature differentials, you know, from the low to the high temperatures, and it seems to be getting wilder. And I do, you know, Stan, how much of this do you attribute to, I'll just ask chemtrailing, for example. I mean, do you see chemtrailing being, whether it's an intended consequence of, you know, the weather's intended consequence of chemtrailing, or it was unintended? I mean,
it's interesting. They hardly ever chemtrail at night, only during the day. Why is that? Is it to blind satellites to what's underneath? I doubt it. Is it to try to mitigate the temperature control of the planet from increased solar radiation getting through our weakening magnetic field? Quite possibly. Now, that's trying to help. Our magnetic field is weakening. There is no question about it, and it's weakening rapidly. When it gets down to a certain point, we're probably going to see the magnetic pole reversal. NASA's even discussed the possibility of that, and a near probability. When that happens, the... the temperature of the planet is going to rise because we're going to have increasing amounts of ultraviolet and the U, A, and B ranges be absorbed in the planet and the plant life and animal life. We'll be indoors because it will hurt us to be outside when that happens. But the weakening magnetic field removes our atmospheric shield that we have now in the ionosphere and in the Van Allen belts as well. All that weakens when the magnetic field dies and our shields are gone. So yes, this is more probably an effort to the chemtrails to help us rather than to hurt us, but it only delayed the inevitable. We are going to see change.
Interesting perspective on that. Okay. Wow.
Yes. You know, there's another thing here. I got a guy down in Africa on the Garden of Eden who has a, he's a Christian fellow. He's got a travel agency called Elyon, which is, you know, the highest. El Elyon is God the highest, but Elyon is Hebrew for high. And I put a link to his site there down about one, two, three, five rows down. It has a nice picture of the Serengeti or the Ngorongoro, anyway, something like that, with the sun setting or rising, depending on your point of view. If you click on that, you can see about his travel agency there. And if you want to take a trip to the Garden of Eden, this guy can arrange it, has arranged it for other people here recently. And nice chap. We email back and forth. So I've finally found a place that we can recommend people to.
Fantastic.
Yeah, if you click on it, you see some nice photos. Did you look in there and see the photos?
Yep. In fact, people watching on YouTube can see them as we speak.
Oh, okay. Me. Isn't the computer wonderful?
I'll tell you.
Up there on the screen.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And pretty soon, Stan, hopefully here in the next couple of months, we'll be able to have you on live, you know, on YouTube and, am I trying to say? Yeah, so no more pajamas with a flap in the back. You're going to have to get dressed.
Yeah, I know. Gosh, I have to get dressed if you're going to go live.
Well, of course, that's optional, you know. But,
yes, these days, definitely optional.
not clothing, the participation. Never mind. Shut up.
Okay.
Now. All right.
Yeah.
You know, it's unbelievable. You know, we spent an hour talking about what I think some pretty important things. We got about 3 minutes left, 2.5 minutes left. How do you want to
let
close?
Me hit something there? Close? Well, the only thing I haven't covered that I wanted to, which is briefly, the oil pipeline being proposed by Israel, being proposed to go from the Kurdish part of Iraq, the northern part, northeastern part, a pipeline to go through northern Iraq over into Jordan and then into Israel, because they want the oil pipeline. Now, you know, I have to wonder about this, because if you click the image, you see the dotted portion of it there. That's a proposed link between Jordan pipeline and the Kurdish pipeline. The Kurds, you know, are right. The territory that operates in the green there, and then kind of light white color is the rest of Iraq, where you have ISIS or Daesh, as some people like to call them. And they've been secretly shipping oil up through, well, not too secretly anymore, but up through into Turkey. So the Turks have been buying oil from Daesh out of Iraq, and now the Israelis want to tie into the same oil pipeline and take their portion over into Jordan, which is coming, this part of the pipeline is coming from Kurdish-occupied Iraq. It's madness over in that area, just absolute madness. Yeah. Anyway.
We really have to keep our eye on that for sure. And that's, you know, that does fit in with biblical prophecies. And I remember you talking about things like this early on. I mean, good
Stan,
calls all.
We have made it to the end of the show.
Oh, hey, we're getting the hook.
We're getting the hook. Some okay, good. Guys.
Great to have you
usual.
Back.
God
yeah,
bless you.
Tell Holly we said hi. And
I'll
have a nice
week. Sitting across from me here. I'll tell her, guys. Lord
all
bless
right.
you.
God bless you,
bye-bye.
Too. We'll be back tomorrow, 7
yeah.
p.m.,
yeah,
YouTube, Global Star Radio Network.
Yeah. Eric and JD and Rhonda, God bless all of you. Thank you so much. Joe, thank you so much.
God
bless.
Have a good night, everyone.
Doug and Joe have left the building.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.